The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
When you're looking to buy a car, you got to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. True car. A lot of times that truth isn't the case. People configure cars online, and then later you find out, oh, that car's not available. True car, real pricing, actual inventory, pre-owned cars. How about that? That's what I got. You got to get that. True car, you can find the car you want. I used it, and I'm very happy with it. I actually wish I owned more cars so I could use True car more often. True car users save on average over $3,000 off MSRP. Just go register. You'll see real price on actual inventory. I'm telling you guys, True car is what's up. Save time, save money. True car.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, pothead.
Look at the game change.
If you want a battle, it's either that you will or you won't.
You know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Bullshit. You didn't convince me. Let me see your real war face.
No, I thought you said that you are right, Spider.
Hey, man!
Heather Graham, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
I'm glad that you're on. I heard you on Mark Maron's podcast, and you were really good, and he seemed to get really... What I love about Mark is he's really interested in the person, and you guys actually spoke about that specifically, and you asked me about, does this ever get like really stressful? Like that, I think that's why we do podcasts, because it's just... I've always wanted to talk with you. I've always wanted to talk with, like, a Navy SEAL spy. I've always wanted to talk with, you know, Pastor Rob Bell or, you know, whomever. I don't know. I can't think of anybody that's ever been on my show ever. So you did really good on that. And it is an odd thing. I think with podcasting, it's like you commented on Mark's Garage. And he was like, come on, you've done a podcast. You had never done a podcast before. He said.
I've never done one, no.
But you have a great publicist. Magic is out. It came out Friday, February 23rd. You guys should go see it because you get to see the... Is that your directorial debut?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of questions about that because I don't know if I'd be able to deal with that. It seems like your publicists, or singular, figured this out. Like, you reach more people with Mark and me than... 8 morning radio shows combined.
Yeah. Like, and it's just cooler. You guys are so cool.
Go on.
Yeah. Funny, smart guys that are interested, and it's awesome. And you have an amazing dog. I'm kind of obsessing on your dog.
Yeah, Dolores, as you guys know, is here, the Maltese, and she's apparently never drank water in her life. She's like a bad breath panting dog. You can hold her whenever you want.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Sure, I'll hold her.
She's
like, I want to take
an
her
emotional
home.
Support. You actually could.
She is emotional support. I do feel supported.
You absolutely, no joke, could take her home and just have to arrange when you're bringing her back.
Okay.
Or whatever.
She's so cute.
What would your entrance music be? Like old, like WWF wrestling? That you knew like Hulk Hogan was coming out because they played like a certain song? Mm-hmm. If you had any song where like, oh shit, Heather Graham's up in this motherfucker. She got like, what would your tune be?
Well, I guess some of my favorite music is Radiohead, but it's kind of melancholy.
I love Radiohead,
but you know, Moby's a friend of mine and he did music for the movie, so I love Moby music. He gave us some original stuff for the
it's
movie.
It's tough to come out to Moby though, because he's so
dreamy. Well,
yeah like I can come out to like the National Anthem by Radiohead.
Yeah, that's true.
Dun, 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 like, oh
yeah.
I saw St. Paul and the Broken Bones and they did a cover of the National Anthem by Radiohead, but it's that long bass line. I was like, I know this song. And then when I realized what it was, I was like, get the fuck out of here. It was filthy. Like, it was...
They're brilliant. I saw them at Coachella.
Radiohead?
Yeah.
I want them to just circle back and pick their instruments up again. I want that, like, Pablo Honey.
Yeah.
Not even, like, Creep. Just, like, take it up to, like, the bends.
And I like Kid A.
I love Kid A.
Yeah. I mean, I like all their albums.
Everything in its right place.
Yeah. So good.
Johnny Greenwood's one of the best guitarists on earth, and he's on stage with a Mac.
I'm like, come on, man. And he's hot.
Yeah.
He's got the, like, British crooked teeth that, like, only British guys can make look hot. Like, Duran Duran hot.
Yeah.
So Radiohead, what song? I would come into either, you didn't ask me, but since we're talking about
what song?
Well, National Anthem is just such that, because you'd be in the ring by the time, like, it gets, like, Miles Davis bitches brew, like, that swirling, like, I'm, like, claustrophobic stuff.
Yeah.
I would come into that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
I was paddleboarding. It was a cloudy day. I was fishing up on paddleboard, and like the kelp grew so high, and I was listening to, I had a shuffle, but it was my own playlist, and it was How to Disappear Completely right as I went over
I
the kelp.
I love that song so much.
And Dolphins went under me. I'm like, I am so high. But no, I'm not. It was amazing.
It's
like,
so cool.
And spooky, like cool spooky.
Wow.
So Radiohead, to a name of song to come later.
Okay.
You're a really... I'm looking up here because I want to have an economy of words. I'm not avoiding eye contact. You're a great actress, and it's not subjective. Like, you are.
Thank you.
Like, well, that movie bombed or this. It's like, nobody goes, well, she stinks. It's not. You're just, you are.
Thank you.
And you go from TV to, I mean, from TV to movies effortlessly. And when you direct... You have to be, as an actress, so aware of, once you're behind the camera, the realization, like, oh, that's just a department.
Yeah.
Did you find, because I know you're a big, transcendental meditation person, like, the awareness, was that something that you didn't, is that something you discovered, was it humbling to direct and realize that acting is just, like, a department?
Well, when I directed, I actually had more respect for actors because I thought, you are so brave. Are you allowed to curse on your show?
Okay. I was like, here comes Heather.
I'm like, they're so fucking brave to be so vulnerable. And just because when I was sitting there watching them, it's like you've put so much work into it as a director. You've done so much prep. But then you're looking at this person be emotionally raw in front of you, and you just realize how brave that you have to be to do that. So I had more respect for actors, actually.
It's amazing to me, and I think to the subscribers, like, you didn't realize that as an actress.
I mean because when you're doing it, you just kind of jump off a cliff. Do you know what I mean? You jump off a cliff. But I think when you sit back watching it as a director, you really realize, God, this person is giving me, like, their heart and soul. Like, and they're just risking a lot. Like, they're just putting themselves out there, and it's pretty cool.
That's interesting. It's like when you do a love scene or something, it's almost no presence or awareness, like you said, jumping off a cliff. And then if you're directing, you have to be uber present, because if somebody's toilet overflows at base camp, they're like, hey, what do we do?
Yeah, it's a weird mixture. But when I was acting, I had my friend there. His name's Michael Nichols, and he's my best friend since I was 17. And he would help me.
When you were?
When I was acting.
Help you how?
Well, he was there every day. He was a producer. So, like, if I was acting, and it's because it's hard to direct yourself acting, you know?
Oh, when you were directing, you had a friend to help
while
you?
While I was directing, my friend was there. He produced
it. Good.
So just because, you can't really watch yourself doing a take while you're doing it. So he would say, I'll do another one, or you got it.
It's funny you just said that. I'm supposed to put myself on tape for the show. And I was doing it for like 2 hours, because if I can see me, and if I'm the arbiter of when it's good enough to release, I'm always like, oh, I look like an idiot.
I hate putting myself on tape. It's horrible.
It was, and impossible.
Yeah.
For me. Like, you have to be like a singing waiter, I think, to actually pull it off. Like,
it's hard watching yourself too. You're like, is that
good
or
really,
not?
I never really cared about watching myself. Like, if you look at a photo album, you only care about the pictures you're in.
Yeah.
You're not like going through like, oh, there's Uncle Jeff and his mustache phase. Like, no, you look, where's mine?
Yeah.
But it was unbearable. So when you're directing, wow. So when you're acting as a director, suddenly you're incredibly aware of, like, where everything is, the spatial relations between people and objects.
Well, you have a lot in your mind. You're thinking, okay, every day costs such and such amount of money. I have to get all this shot in a day or else I lose these scenes. You know, you're thinking, like, I have this many hours. You're thinking, how many shots can I get done? You're thinking, will I make my day?
Are you thinking that when you act too?
No, you shouldn't be thinking it then, no.
Well, I know you shouldn't be. I mean, our minds want, as you know from meditation, like what comes into your mind, you can't help what rolls in. Like if somebody's just, or something's in a weird way, were you able to actually staunch that and keep that from entering?
It's a mixture of like what you're saying. Like, how do you totally relax so that you can do your best work and also be focused enough to get the job done in the time you have?
Well, how do you think you did?
I think
I haven't seen, I've seen a lot of different clips. and everybody go see it.
I feel good about it. I feel good about it. I feel like it was a really, it was a magical experience. It really was. I just felt like things came together. I mean, it's funny, and I just felt so lucky to be there. It was such a long process to get it made that when we were finally there, I was just super grateful and just like, I have to just do the best job I could possibly do.
You hired a comic. You're very smart. My man Chris D'Elia playing like
he's so funny,
playing
right?
a horrible person.
I know.
Who's your favorite Muppet? Like from Sesame Street all the way up
Kermit.
To, all right. Front man.
Yeah.
Good.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Amazing.
Well, it's such a good song, right?
It really is. Yeah. Jim Henson's probably like the greatest actor that ever lived.
He's brilliant. And did you hear the Willie Nelson version of that song?
It's, yes.
It's pretty awesome.
There's not much Willie Nelson's ever gotten past me. And then when I met Lucas, it's like he's so talented also and so unique of his dad. You remember when Kermit didn't have his collar on? Like, you know, that the frill around
yeah,
his neck?
Yeah,
and he acted like he was naked the whole episode of Sesame Street?
I don't remember that one.
I just remember as a kid when I actually saw frogs, because, like, you know, in the cement of New Jersey, there's no frogs sitting around. I was like, they don't have the collars.
Wow.
But I was like 12. I was way too old to, like, actually think frogs had, like, fucking Kermit the Frog collars. When you are trying to sell this, I found this sad. It was just, hey, man, you got to make the guys more likable. Nobody really, guys that are that disgusting are saying, no guy acts that disgusting. And I personally, as a feminist, I don't know why more studio heads or executives can't wrap their fucking brains around the population and the amount of women and the amount of successful shows that just explode. What do you attribute your... You were vigilant. You just kept trying and going, and you never got discouraged.
I know. I'm keep on trying, like the Energizer Bunny. Just get back up again.
Well, to talk,
I have a lot of determination.
What are, like, I tipped it a little, but what are some things that happened when you went? Because, first of all, you are Heather Graham. There is a cachet, there is a value to you coming in and directing something for a studio. So the fact that people didn't see that because the male character seemed too either predatory, but it's like it's.
I mean, the main thing that people would say was women's movies don't make money. Nobody cares about women's stories. I mean, sometimes someone would say, oh, this character, he seems like such a jerk, you know, this can't be real, or he needs to have a nice side to him, you know? But.
Yeah, I do know. It's. When you pitch a TV.
But sometimes they would say, like, you're not a big enough star to get this greenlit. Like, they're like, okay, well, if you were Jennifer Lawrence, okay. But no, not you.
But you have longevity. I hope you know that. Like,
yeah, no, I know.
I'm not giving you a pep talk. But it's kind of great. It's a real victory that this is now what it is.
No, it's great. I'm so
grateful.
That
half magic. And you got to work with really great women that were really funny.
Yeah.
You seem really comfortable doing comedy.
Yeah, I love comedy. I love watching it. I just feel like there's enough things in life to make you depressed and make you sad and scared. So why not watch things that make you laugh?
Do you think we're predisposed to going towards happy or predisposed to complaining as human beings? Because your character has that line. No, it's not you. It's one of your friends, I think, says, why do we keep sitting around talking about all the negative things in our life?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes women bond through shared trauma. But, and I mean, that's good in moments. But it's great to bond through sharing happiness and joy. So in my movie, I tried to show women bonding that way. That expands your joy as opposed to talking about sad things all the time expands the sadness.
It's odd. Like, when you get old, I'm 47. It's like, the people that used to be around me that were, you know what, man? Like, people complain about traffic. Yeah. Our grandparents complained about traffic. Yeah. It's there. When you leave, it's there.
Yeah.
And people come in, like, actually sweating and disheveled, like, can you believe it? Like, yeah. Why don't you just sit still and relax and surrender to it?
You seem, like, very relaxed.
Well, thank you.
You seem like you have a very easygoing vibe. How do you maintain that?
Oh, relentless 12-step work every morning and night and checking in all day. Because you only hear what's edited, so you have no idea what my head's like. Because I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I'm not a self-doubter. I don't carry worry.
you asked me if I get not anxious, like if it's really stressful doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It just seems fun. I guess I just thought this seems like a really fun job. It is and fun. I thought if it was your job, like you're saying, would you just see it as stressful? Like anyone might view their job as stressful?
Yes.
Or are you just like, this job's cool?
If it was my job,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
But I, you know, as I was born a comic.
Yeah.
And I get to act as a result of my stand-up comedy. And
I admire stand-up comedians so much. I don't know how you do it. It's so cool.
I think all comics would say it's the only thing we know how to do. It's
really?
Just the only thing.
How do you get up and stand up in front of people and just talk and be funny?
We've waited our entire lives for that audience to be sitting in one place.
Wow.
And like every class, like I was a maniac as a kid. I was a maniac as an adult too, but I was telling this to my 15-year-old son yesterday, like, How do you diagnose an 11 or 12-year-old? How do you educate an 11, 12-year-old kid who's going to be a nationally headlining comedian, internationally known as a comic, only using his words and his energies, but he's never held a microphone before? Conceptually, it's unavailable as an idea, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's the number one fear in the world, getting up in front of an audience.
Yeah.
But you did a lot of – you did musical theater?
Yeah, yeah.
You did Damn
yeah.
Yankees?
Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. That was a highlight of my high school years because I was like this nerdy kid, but then I got to play this sexy part in Damn Yankees, and it was fun.
I did Damn Yankees in seventh grade.
Did you?
I played Mr. Welsh, the owner.
Oh, my God.
And I had a bow tie on. I remember at the end, like during curtain calls, I kept like doing my bow tie like you see in cartoons, like, like real like, hey, everybody, I got a bow tie on.
That's cute.
And on the ride home, like for some reason, my grandfather was up from the Jersey Shore.
My mom's from the Jersey Shore.
Whereabouts?
Wildwood?
Yeah.
Yeah, I spent a lot of my summers there. It's awesome.
It
Those
is
some
awesome.
Of the best
I was in the ocean my whole life.
Oh, it's great.
And my grandfather was up from Seaside Heights, and he just goes, in the car ride home, like, everyone's like happy and jovial, and he goes, why'd you keep pulling your tie? And he like kind of, I mean, he wasn't that kind of a guy at all. Like he just made parking lots and he was like the most positive person in my life, but he knew what I was doing. He saw that kid like.
You were nervous?
I was like, I got a reaction like, and I just kept going back to the well.
I get it. Like, so you're getting a lot of laughs.
Just
so
stand there and just, you know, be you. But I didn't know what I was.
Well, it sounds like you knew how to get laughs.
Yeah. Now the whole exercise is getting everybody really quiet, but not like masturbatory, just. When you tell a story, when you get the room super quiet, that's the power.
Wow, because they're listening.
Yeah, they're leaning towards you. Because when I started for like 27 years, it was just like fucking Normandy invasion, like, you're going to rock your faces off. And then you tell, then life like kicks you in the face a few thousand times.
Yeah.
And you tell an audience about it. I remember I told my ex-wife once, I go, hey, just realized I haven't told the audience about my mom's Alzheimer's and the fact that so-and-so, you know, we tipped that guy. Like, nobody died or anything, but it was, like, scarier than this, and it was, like, a heartfelt thing. She goes, I was literally walking out the door to the Melrose Improv. She goes, how are you going to make all that funny? And I went, exactly. You don't have to if you're sharing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get a laugh. You just move on to the next story.
Wow. You're confident.
Well, it happened.
Yeah.
This is what happened to me.
Yeah.
It's not like, why aren't you guys laughing? Like when you tell, something happened to you and you tell a story at a party.
Yeah.
You're not like, oh, I thought that was going to get a better reaction.
Yeah.
People are just affirmative.
You're connecting with people. You're really sharing.
That's all it is.
Yourself.
And apparently it's like this missing thing in comedy.
Wow.
Where it's just telling people, like your mom has Alzheimer's. It's just.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. But I mean, that wasn't, I don't know why we're good at comedy. And I don't know. And it is the most strange, it's all liminal time and space. And as a meditation person, you know, when you just start to sort of untether.
Yeah.
But that's the wheelhouse. And you know, it is like a meditation because I guess when you're meditating, it's not, would you have a mantra when you meditate?
Wait, do TM or?
No, I have to meditate.
What do you do?
A morning,
okay.
You know, 24 hours ahead of me, and
okay.
So
do you just close your eyes and focus on your breath, and
that's what I've been doing lately. Because a guy in this class I go to goes, not a meditation class, a different class, and he goes, when you pray, you talk to God. When you meditate, you listen to God.
Oh wow, that's
and now
beautiful.
I'm just like, oh wow, yeah. It's just realignment, the temple space, just realigning. Yeah. And I had to write my own
Serenity Prayer. It was like a first homework assignment.
That's beautiful.
And I realized, like, as the weeks went on, I just kept making it shorter and shorter.
Wow, so what did it say?
I'll tell you off the air. A lot of pausing and just slowing down.
Wow.
And realizing I don't run
like
this.
Like, that's like having faith. Like, you don't, you're not in control.
Yes.
You're turning it over. Yeah.
I'm, I want everybody to, if everybody on earth would just act differently, this would all run much more smoothly.
Right, right, right.
But I don't realize that until it's way too late.
Yeah.
And
I can relate to that. Wanting to control things and you can't, you have to surrender it.
Yeah.
Because you're never happy when you're trying to control things.
No. Too many moving pieces. Too many moving parts. Too many trains. Too many tracks.
Yeah, totally.
It's like being a director.
Totally.
There's got to be something like UPM manager that comes up to you like, hey, what are we going to do about the carpet in the dining room? And you're like, no idea what he's saying. Is there something that you actually completely, once it's done, block it out?
Well, so when it comes up later, a lot of times other people take care of those things, or like you've already looked at the place, you went there a few weeks earlier, like, can you deal with this carpet, yes or no, you know? Or you usually, you try to deal with that ahead of time, especially when you're doing an independent movie because you don't have a lot of money.
Is there anything that you took care of, because you must be good, I think, at compartmentalizing good and bad and putting it away, that when it actually came back as a topic, was there anything you actually had completely forgotten about?
Well, something happened. Like, there's a scene at a female empowerment class, and Molly Shannon plays the female empowerment teacher. And then I had this friend. Her name's Christiane Northrup. And she's, like, very well known in the health community. She's written a lot of books, like this book called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. But so she's never really been in a movie before. So we're like, we're breaking for lunch. We'll be back, you know. So she goes in her car, and she drives and goes to lunch. She doesn't realize we're going to be back in 30 minutes. We need her there. She doesn't realize we haven't shot her side. She just leaves and we don't know where she is. I think she turned her phone off. We're calling her going, where did she go? Where did she go? And her daughter, Ann Mahler's in the scene. And I'm like, where'd your mom go? And like, she was just gone. She didn't realize, like, time is money. We haven't shot her yet. She was behind the camera.
Went to lunch.
She just went to lunch. She's like, oh, I had a great lunch with, you know, her friends that she brought to the set. I'm like, no.
Think about what you just painted. Everyone is freaking out.
Freaking out.
She comes back. And what was her title? Not title, but she does what for?
She acts in the movie, but she is a doctor who became a writer of books. She writes a lot of books that empower
women. The topic specific, women's empowerment.
Yeah. So she plays one of the teachers of a women's
empowerment. No, I mean in real life. She does women's empowerment.
In real life, she does it. Yeah.
She goes to lunch because you say lunch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She comes back.
She doesn't realize you're supposed to stay on the set.
Right, but she doesn't leave for hours.
Yeah. She left for like an hour. We had a 30-minute lunch. She left for an hour.
That's actually a quick lunch.
In the life of a movie is like death.
And she came back how? Happy. And you guys are losing your shit.
You're freaking out. She's like, I thought you already shot my side. We're like, no, we were shooting the other side. We haven't been on film at all yet today.
She was the healthiest person there. Just because she went and got lunch.
I was
and turned
having
her
a heart
phone
attack.
Off. I know. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, look at the painting you just painted. Like, she comes
and
back
her
like,
daughter was
hey,
like,
I feel great. I had the best lunch, you said.
By the end of the day, she's like, oh, I don't like, movies are hard. Because she's been on TV. She's done like Oprah a lot. And she's done a lot of talk shows, but she's never shot a movie. So she didn't understand how long it takes.
It's really like, that's why you worked with Ed Burns. I loved it because it was just five boroughs. 25 days. Jay Morris, we're in Marat. We're going to get out of there. Let's go. We're going to City Island. I'm like, I don't know what a City Island is. He goes, come on, I'll take you. It'll be great. And then you're done.
Wow.
It's like being on a pirate ship.
That's fun about independent movies.
Yeah. On Go, we didn't have permits for anything. So we'd like shoot something in a liquor store. Actually, me and Scott Wolf's like breakup scene. And he's like, we got to get it because the cops are coming.
Because in Swingers, we shot in bars that were open, too.
You guys didn't have permits?
Wasn't that Doug Liman?
Yeah, that's where I was going with it.
So he was the same. Yeah, we shot in like a bar that was open to the public, too.
And you'd have permits or anything?
No permits, nothing.
I don't know anybody more efficient in that than Doug.
I know. He's pretty amazing.
He's pretty – yes, he is. And I was aware of like the scope, the width of his like – he's pretty nutty, my words, not yours. Yeah. It's like, if you're in that laser, you go, wow, he's a genius. If you're just off to the side, you're like, I think he's a madman. It's like, but it just keeps going back and forth all day.
Hey, podcast listener, this is Rob Cisternino. I'm the Rob, and Rob has a podcast, and the new season of Survivor is just getting started, and we've got new episodes for you 5 days a week. Join us for interviews with your favorite past Survivor players and this season's losers right after they get their torch snuffed. Listen free to Rob Has a Podcast, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. And if you like the show, why not share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on iTunes?
Swingers must. It seems like a really fun movie to shoot. Was I mean?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the budget was like $250,000.
Jesus.
And I mean, none of those people were known at that time. It was fun.
What scene? What are you like proud? Like, what is like a movie or a show that you're proud of? All of it, and you got yeah. you know, it's like there's a couple you want to go by the wayside.
I mean, I feel really proud of being in Boogie Nights, and I feel really proud of this movie that I directed. I just feel like it was a labor of love that I did it for fun and for free, you know, and just because I had this, I wanted to empower women and empower men, and just I felt like my intentions were pure. And with Boogie Nights, I felt like it was really, it felt like a so exciting creatively too. But I mean, there's so many things I had a little fun on. Like I had fun on Swingers, I had fun on Bowfinger, I had fun on.
I didn't say fun. I said proud.
Proud, yeah.
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 It's like I found the things I'm most proud of. Nobody saw.
Wow. Okay. So what are you the most proud of?
Seeing other people.
Yeah.
It was just. I've never seen. I didn't know if I was arguing with my wife or I was acting like I was arguing with my wife when I got home.
Wow.
It was like
so real.
Crazy writing, it was, yeah. But it wasn't. It was like a very light. Comedy,
yeah,
about a couple that wants to like see other people,
yeah,
but it really got into me. It was really odd.
Wow.
I fell in love too with Julia Nicholson. I really fell in love with her.
She's a great actress. I love her.
I've never said that on this podcast before. I was married, so I kept it close to the vest. I was like, I don't want to say that, bring up stuff. I absolutely fell in love with Julia
Nicholson. Wow, she's cool. I just watched her in something. She's really good.
She pulled up the set one day blasting Biggie Smalls. And I was like, oh my God, that's that.
She's, love her.
I did.
So what happened? You just had a crush on her from afar?
Yeah, like we hung out and stuff. Like we didn't like make out or fool around. You know, it was just, you're doing a movie, so you're not sure if it's even real. Like you're on set with, I mean, you're a beautiful woman and you're on set with handsome guys and what is it? Familiarity breeds attempt. And then you're like, is this real or is this because we're off to sea in this ship? This pirate ship that we're all on together.
Yeah. Well, your job is to convince yourself you're in love with a person sometimes. So.
Yeah. It's really strange. It's interesting. When Boogie Nights, I mentioned it a little earlier because you said comics are so brave. And I was like, excuse me. You said as a director, you can't believe actresses. And you sort of like stepped back and excluded yourself.
Well.
It was like a separate entity. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I am brave too because I do it. But when you're sitting back watching them, you're like, wow, this person's really, really brave. And then you're like, wow, I don't know if I can do that. And then you get scared.
And my response was, you roller skated naked for a month.
I guess.
That's like that was.
Well, I wasn't naked for a month, but.
Well, I'm a comic. Yeah. I like to color outside the lines to prove a point. Yeah. Like, no, that's a horse. Look how dark it is
too.
Over here.
Thank you.
Like, of course you're brave. I don't even know if you can really roller skate if you learned it for the role.
I did. I learned it for the role.
Did you really?
Yeah. I mean, I think I did it as a kid, but then I remember I took lessons and the girl who was my stand-in, they made her wear the roller skates too. And it was hard because we're set. There's all these like wires and cables and she totally bit it, you know, because I had been taking roller skating classes for 2 weeks and they just put her in the roller skates and she was just roller skating around the set.
How do you audition for that? Because it's got to be so descriptive or not.
I didn't wear roller skates. You just read the scenes, basically.
Yeah. I don't think you're insane.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like you just come in and read. And I think he might have already slightly been thinking pretty seriously about hiring me. So I don't know. I just auditioned for it.
Was it written specific to roles, camera left, roles this way where it got in your head in your preparation? Does that make sense?
I mean,
I don't want you to answer anything
idea.
If I'm not.
It was the idea of a person that won't take their roller skates off, how she created this identity for herself. And it's sort of playful and like almost like I'm not going to enter the adult world and putting these skates on so that I can have this, you know. She's almost playing a character.
Well, definitely.
Yeah.
I was just curious if it was written where it actually got into your head when you're auditioning, like that you actually walked a different way during your audition. Like
I was sitting down. No, I was sitting down. It was just very casual, the audition.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're horrible.
Yeah, I didn't bring in roller skates and stuff like that.
Did you ever read David Mamet's True and False?
No.
He said, when you audition, know that everyone in the room is your moral and intellectual inferior because at one time they tried to do what you're doing and they took the desk. Say the words as well as you can and say them better next time.
But like, having said that, though, being a director-writer is deeply inspiring in a different way from acting because you can actually tell a story that you want to tell and something that means something to you and you can put your point of view out into the world.
Yeah.
That is pretty badass.
It's the most.
And in a way, that's even more brave than acting because you're saying, okay, I'm not just going to play this character and make that real. I'm actually going to tell you my point of view and make myself so vulnerable, and you might not like it, but I don't care. This is me.
I think you're excluded from the group he's talking about. I think he's pretty much just talking about like suits, and you're definitely not a suit. This is going to sound very odd, but hang in there with me. Do you think it was an odd stroke of good timing that all, like the Me Too and the Weinstein
seriously.
And all this, like, and then this happens to be right when your film is about women are like, no more bad guys.
It's serious. It's amazing. You know what? Honestly, I sometimes call psychic. And I called the psychic and I was like, do you think my movie's ever going to get made? Like, should I keep pursuing this? She's like, yeah. She's like, when your movie comes out, something's going to be going on in the news and it's going to give your movie a lot of attention.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah.
I know,
what's your favorite number?
I like 3, 7, and 9.
My favorite number is 37. That's funny. You said
really?
37 first, yeah. Well, 9 too, yeah. That's good. You're an Aries?
No, I'm Aquarius. What are you?
I'm an Apollo. No, it's an old Brian Regan. No, Dennis Regan joke. The girl goes,
I love Brian Regan.
The girl goes, I thought so. Virgo Leo. But I was born like premature. Like I'm all mixed up. I was born ass first.
Huh. I'm a Leo rising.
Good. I don't know anything about horoscopes. I'm not even sure why I asked you.
I don't know that much either. But I have some friends that are seriously, they love that stuff.
How accurate is it? There's only 12 houses of the zodiac.
It's interesting.
You know what? Yeah. That's the best description of it I've ever heard in my life.
It's interesting. Like, why not? You know, I mean, it's interesting.
When you meditate, what is the entry? What's the trajectory? Like, where do you start from? Do you do a mantra? Do you do, I've done chakra colors and stuff.
Wow,
that's what
that's
I used
cool.
to do the most because I learned it, like, in a yoga class.
That's
long.
Cool. Yeah, I'm so into yoga. Like,
that was my go-to.
Love
just
yoga. Where do you go to yoga?
I don't anymore.
Okay.
I just tried it a couple times, and that's what I got from it. I'm like, I'm good now. I don't really have time to go anywhere.
Really? You could do yoga here. You just get one of those streaming videos.
Well, yeah. I could also, you know, there's a lot of things I could do that
yes.
I love.
Yes.
And yoga I like.
Yes. I love yoga. Love it.
What has it helped you with outside of physical, you know, your body and your mindset? Like, have you seen, like, situationally,
it's like a massage from the inside out. I mean, do you ever feel like, you know, if you're really relaxing, you realize how tense you can be? Like, I clench my jaw and I feel like I could feel like muscles when you really relax. You're like, oh my God, I think I'm clenching my jaw a lot. And you realize that when you relax yourself. And I think it's like what you said with perspective. When you relax yourself, then you can just enjoy your life more. You can go, okay, I can't control these things. I can't control these things. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, I live in America and I have enough money to buy food. You know what I mean? You can see your life as in a positive way.
Do you have a mantra when you meditate?
I do. I mean, I do TM, so they give you a mantra, and they have this weird thing where you're not supposed to tell anyone. But you're
I don't want you to say it.
You're not supposed to
now,
try
you know,
to
about
think
my prayer.
About it. Like, really? Okay.
I was like, but nobody told
That's
me
okay.
not to share
you don't
it.
To share it.
No, I'll share it with you.
Okay.
I just don't want a million people nitpicking me on that.
I want to know your prayer. That's cool.
It's really not that interesting.
But it's cool. I mean, I think intentions are cool. Sometimes I think about things I can't control, and I write them on a piece of paper, and then I put them in a drawer and go, I can't control that.
This is amazing. Seriously, this is amazing. I just said to a buddy of mine, she was getting a massage. I said, whatever's bothering you, because it was a list. I said, write it down on a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, and give it. She was at a hotel, and give it. She's a comic, and give it to the desk, and say, "I'll get this when I come out." Because I've
funny.
Done that on my own.
Yeah,
and then when you
good,
have something
right?
that's not on the list, it's alone, like a roach on a white floor. It's like this stupid one thing.
Yeah, I do it. I put it in a drawer, and then I have all these little things. And then maybe like a year later, I'll open it. And I'll look at the drawer, and usually like everything just works its way out. You know, the things that you were so worried about, they're like resolved usually.
Do you worry a lot?
Yeah, I do.
How's it been working?
Well, I
has
don't
it changed
like
the
it.
Has
okay.
it changed the outcome of
I feel
anything?
Like my two flaws that I'm working on right now in my life are worrying too much and being hard on myself because I feel like I want to let this go out of my life.
You will.
Yeah.
Because it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. It's not productive.
You ever go bowling?
I haven't.
In your life?
Yes.
Ever?
I'm very bad at it, though.
Well, so am I.
Okay.
You ever roll like a gutter ball and you lean your body like trying to like, that's worry.
Yeah. Oh, you know, somebody said worry is praying for something that you don't want to have happen to happen. Or at least said, if you pray, why worry? If you worry, why pray?
It's never served you.
Yeah, no,
it's never changed the ball.
No.
From going in there.
No, and it's like, odd, I think as a kid, maybe you worry and you think,
of course you worry as a kid. We all worry.
I'll prepare for something bad happening. But you're like, oh, there's no point in preparing. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
I think that's where the Jersey Shore was great for me, because it was just, relaxing. There is no worry. Yeah. And I was with like a grandfather who just like knew me. Like he just got, with no words, I wasn't a big talker.
Did you eat saltwater taffy?
Of course.
Yeah.
These are all fake teeth. These are all veneers. And the worrying, at what point do you realize you've won? Like you're a second term president. Like put your feet up.
Yeah.
You just made a movie.
Yeah.
How's it
going to
do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how it does, Heather.
Yeah.
Is that a big worry?
Well, of course. You know, I'd like it to do well. And
at the same time,
it's like, okay, I could look at it and go, I'm so grateful I got this made. It took me years and
how many years?
It's like 7 years. But
it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was not when you were, because you're going forward. Mm-hmm. Like hummingbirds can't fly backwards.
Yeah.
You love hummingbirds?
Yeah, they're really cool.
They can only go forward. It's like when you were selling the movie, there was no worry because you were going this way. It's almost like when you're not going forward, that's you, the editorial you. That's when the walls get a little lower and you're like, who's this neighbor? What's this over there? It's like,
yeah,
everything's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know why I know that.
Yeah.
I just know everything's fine.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good feeling to have.
I've had a really bad couple of years.
Oh, really? Why? What happened?
Yeah, divorce, 2 years of custody court. And
oh, that's
just
terrible.
That
sounds really stressful.
You saw a picture of my two sons. That was yesterday.
They're so cute.
Oh, it's been...
You look adorable.
It's amazing. Look, life's not fair, but it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And
you have gorgeous kids.
Thank you very much.
And very cute dogs.
Do you want kids?
I mean, I guess it was not like a thing where I was like, I have to have kids. You know, I have had moments where I have fantasies where I think, oh, that looks really fun. And then I have other moments where I'm like, oh my God, it's so awesome not to have kids.
It is. It's horrible. It's great and horrible. They're wonderful, terrible people that ruin
like
your
I was
life.
With my girlfriend last night. I love her. And she just had a baby and her two kids are like amazing. But she was talking about how she has this massive responsibility now for like the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And at that moment I was like, oh, maybe it's not so bad. I don't have kids. You know what I mean? It was like, that sounds like a lot.
Natasha Leggero had a great joke. She said, having a kid's like getting a DUI from the universe. It's one of the best lines I've ever heard. It's exactly it. You're like, hey, I got a show on... wherever you want to come, like, oh, yeah, it's $50,000. Do 18 minutes. Like, oh, I can't because this asshole has school tomorrow. they're actual ball and chain people, but nobody regrets it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mrs. Menendez. You were great on that.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, thank you. That was fun.
Was that TBS?
It was NBC.
Oh, they're the same thing in my head from pitching shows. Like
it was Universal NBC.
Yeah, NBC Universal. Yeah. The Menendez. Nobody joins a podcast. I'm so used to doing like radio where it's like they go say the person's name all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like right there.
Because someone just tunes in. Yeah.
It's like, look, man, if what I'm saying isn't fucking interesting enough, I'm like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar joining us, my fake radio voice. When you were studying,
I appreciate you not having a fake radio voice.
I like that about Mark too. He doesn't have it.
Yeah, he's cool.
I was just impressed with it. I was so excited you were coming on the podcast. It's like there's no way to get you in an hour. Like it's impossible. There's so many avenues. It's like being in a rotary, doing 100 miles an hour. Like when I sit in front of you, it's like.
Well, thanks for wanting to get me. I'm flattered.
I'm flattered just that you're here. It's great. I'm so happy you made this movie. I'm so happy a woman didn't take no for an answer. I'm so happy you didn't settle and you got great people in your film.
And I feel like the universe rewarded the situation by saying, and by the way, the movie's going to be released like 3 months after there's this massive, powerful women's movement happening.
Yeah, it's like it's an odd stroke. You don't want to be like, yeah, bad things happen to people.
As a woman, though, it's cool. You're like, okay, finally people are talking about these things that used to happen behind closed doors and nobody felt like they could talk about it, but now they can. So it is a positive thing.
It is very positive. Why do women like bad boys?
Well, I kind of go into that in my movie, to be honest. It's like, why do we choose these people that aren't great? I mean, I think some of it is we relive these unhealthy family dynamics that we were in, trying to solve them. And I think a lot of it has to do with self-esteem. Like, if you don't love yourself, then maybe you're not choosing somebody that treats you great. So I think that's something that I talk about in my movie that I deal with in my life. Like, how do I love myself and have good self-esteem?
Well, I only asked you because it's in your movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't a coincidence.
It's interesting to talk about anyway.
Out of nowhere, like, hey, hey, Heather, as a representative of the female race, why do we... I was thinking about that on the drive here, and I with my own personal issues, it's all... I think all anybody really wants... Obviously, people want to be loved and cared for, but I think it's, I see you. Like, that lowest notch of value.
Uh-huh.
That's my personal thing, like insane, irrational need for validation every interaction. And then I was thinking about the women in your movie saying, like, no more bad guys, no more jerks. Like, that's it. And I thought, why do women do it? And I was thinking what you, like, it all goes to the living rooms, I think, as a kid, too. And it's like if you date an asshole, your value. How tall are you?
5'7" and a half.
So, like, at a young age, you accepted 5'6" as your value, even though it's 5'7" and a half. Then something terrible happens at 5'5". Then you meet a guy in high school that dates you, and he comes in at 5'4", and you're like, that's almost all. But it's not, because you started at 5'8".
Well, because I think, in the world, sexism sometimes tells women, like, don't dream big. Like, you know, it's a man's world. You're not going to get what you want. And it's just like going, oh, maybe I can get what I want. I don't need to listen to that.
You're living that right now.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that's the awareness. Like, you are now living, I can get whatever I want. You, for 7 years, you went, I'm not stopping. This is important to me to make. Like, there's what can you not do? Like, really, I'm trying.
Shout out to Bill Sheinberg, who financed the film, and also my friend Michael Nichols, who told me to direct it.
Michael Nichols, I'm very grateful for you and Bill
Sheinberg. I'm grateful for you guys. Yeah, if you're listening.
Because you're here right now. favorite Muppet is Kermit. Entrance music is a Radiohead song called...
There's so many good
Pick
ones.
Pick anybody. Pick any. You don't have to be Radiohead.
What's the one? What's the name of it? The one they used in Twilight at the end of the movie. I don't know. What is it?
You don't have to be Radiohead. You can be anybody.
Okay. Any song.
I had a guy. Ed Solomon wrote Mosaic on HBO, like Men in Black, and I asked him who his Muppet was, and he was just like, I don't know. And like 2 weeks later, he texted me, Sandy
Eagle.
That's the
Eagle thing, they're thought-provoking questions, and now it's like, you're going
to... Who's your favorite Muppet, and what song you want to enter the ring to is not really that deep, but it is.
Well, the song you want to enter the ring to is... Actually, my friend's on this dating website, and you have to choose a song and put all these pictures of yourself to a song. I'm like, that takes a lot of thought. You're like, what song do I want to put to represent me?
Yeah, it's an odd way to vet, but
so
I understand.
So who's your favorite Muppet?
You want to know something? Corey, you can back me on this. You're the first person in maybe a year to actually ask me back. Nobody has ever asked me who mine is. No one has ever gone, I don't know, who's yours?
Right.
It was Rolf. Wow. The piano playing dog.
Wow. Okay.
Because he wasn't used a lot, so he looked like really, he would give good hugs. Because he was like real fresh.
That's kind of like what your dogs are like. They give good hugs,
and
right?
They give great hugs. And he wasn't like all pilly. And now I really think it's just Bert. Yeah. Like, I love Bert.
Yeah.
People are like, he's mean. I'm like, no, Ernie's like a psycho. He never leaves him alone.
The Swedish Chef's pretty funny, too.
Yes.
Right?
Three fingers. Bork. That's amazing stuff. Good job.
But I got to work with Frank Oz, which is cool. Right?
Really?
Yeah, because he directed Bowfinger that I was in. And
he was
Miss Piggy's voice. And I'm like, the whole time I was working with him, I'm like, this is so cool.
You know, I realized, like, Kermit the Frog and Ernie's the same voice. And Grover and Miss Piggy. So then he also did Grover.
Yeah.
Because, like...
Yeah, it was him and Jim Henson.
It's like, hey, Bert, I'm Ernie. And then it's like, if I just keep going, all of a sudden I'm Kermit the Frog.
Well, that's a good...
They're the same voice.
Yeah.
Like, impressions are like that. Like, if you do one impression of somebody, you can do, like, two other people. It's the same, like, register.
Yeah.
And Grover and Miss Piggy's the same voice. At different registers.
Yeah, he was also, I think, Darth Vader? Or no, he was Yoda. Sorry, Yoda. Frank Oz is also Yoda. Yeah.
And he was actually Yoda.
Yeah.
The way he... lived, he's wow,
isn't that cool?
It is cool. I think you're cool. Like, nobody we're talking about is cooler than you. And I'm dead serious. Like, you're fucking cool.
Thanks.
But you're really cool. I see you.
Thank you.
Heather Graham's movie is bad posture.
You have great posture. I know, that's what posture. I was thinking. I'm
you
like,
have,
I have
no,
bad
you have
posture.
Great
I want to sit
posture.
Up higher and have better posture.
Maybe I need to wear wedges. Are you wearing wedges?
I'm wearing like a slight heel.
I need to wear just big wedges so I have to stand up straighter.
You're so lucky as a guy not to have to wear high heels.
It's the only way I'll stand. I'm 47 years old. I'm almost 50. You'd think I'd stand up straight by now.
You have to just like, you know.
I know what I have to do. Yeah. I don't.
Maybe you could get a Pilates roller and lay on it and then you can.
Or I could just slouch. What's your favorite game show? Ever.
Ever. I don't really watch that many game shows, but I like playing competitive games with my friends, card games.
Like?
Mau Mau, Texas Hold'em.
You play poker?
Yeah. I love poker, but then I get too competitive sometimes, and then I have to stop because I get really competitive.
It's fun when you have like a great friend. Like Steve Hash and I are like this, Allie Hilfiger's husband. It's like we're super competitive, but we are on the same team competitive.
Yeah.
Like the two of us are like shooting an air rifle in like his art studio, and we're like, we're the fucking best. It's not like I'm better than you competitive.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun to be a little bit competitive. Oh, and also Chodai D. Have you ever played that?
No.
It's a fun game too.
I'm an American. I don't know what you're talking. That's some Saigon business.
And Mau Mau is a really, it's like all these crazy rules and you have to remember them. And if you don't, then Mau everyone Mau. Penalizes you.
Really?
Yeah.
And sounds like something you get at a bathhouse.
It's funny. It's fun.
Mau Mau.
Yeah. It's like Hong Kong poker, I think.
Is it like Hollywood Park business?
It's a little bit like Uno, but it's a
now,
more
Uno,
complicated. Yeah.
It's on.
It's good. It's very good.
What's the worst candy bar? I know you like candy bars as
the
a kid.
The worst.
I know your favorites.
I like white trash candy bars. I don't like really fancy ones.
No,
you know?
I know what you like. Reese's and...
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah,
it's
you're
best.
Smart. Yeah. Those are great. But yeah. I'm saying like... I don't like Butterfingers. Not sponsored.
I wouldn't buy that, no.
It sticks all in my like enamel in my teeth. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think your entrance music is Who's That Lady? Who's That Lady?
That's a good song.
I'll come up with them for you.
Yeah.
I just think you're the coolest, and I don't want this to end.
Thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
And thanks for talking about my movie.
Yeah,
Hopefully
I'm
thrilled. Watch it one day.
I mean, it's not out yet. I am a time traveler, but
when it comes out,
give me some space.
Yeah
I'll definitely. I will absolutely. I can't wait to see.
So you're friends with Chris D'Elia? You guys like do stand up?
We're
stuff?
Friendly. Like we don't hang out, but he's been on the podcast a couple times. He's really funny.
Yeah,
and
he
what
is.
A great voice, like. Nobody knows. He's like, you really are with him and present, he's got like an old radio voice, like old time. You're like,
he's
Hello.
Such an interesting guy. You know, his dad is a big TV director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Chris a lot.
Yeah, he's cool.
But he's not as cool as you. I'm telling you, you're the coolest person
Thank
I've met.
Thank you.
Well, Heather Graham's movie is half magic, but it's all magic. Everybody.
Full magic.
It's full magic, half magic, and just wherever it is, go see it because I said I put my name on it, and you go get it, and you go do it. Everybody go see Heather Graham's movie that she directed, wrote, starred in, all for you. The least you could do, because I put my name on it, is go support this great gal, because you should. And that's that. More stories.
Who's that lady? Who's that lady? Beautiful. Who's that lady? Who's that lady? Who's that lady? That real, real, real fine lady. The beautiful lady. I wish somebody would introduce her to me. I didn't get a chance To ask her to dance. It was love at first sight.